And we're holding on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph for about a third of the way down the Amud. The line begins Ema. We were talking about the Mishnah had said that you can't use bundles for schach, and we said the reason is bundles of straw or wood or what have you. And the reason was, we said, because of Zeras Oitzer, the concern that a person might put such a bundle on there, not for the purpose of schach at all, but just in order to dry it out. And then if he changes his mind and decides to use it for schach, you'd have a problem of tasa v'lemina osuri. Therefore, the Chacham made of Zeta, even if you're using such bundles to begin with for the purpose of schach. In that connection, we mentioned something that Rav Chisda said in the name of Ravina Bar Shila. So now the Gemara brings, by the way, something else that Rav Chisda said in the name of Ravina Bar Shila, a side thing having to do with Morer on Pesach, and then we're going to get back to schach. So the Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Chisda, amar Ravina Bar Shila, hani mravista de agma, Morer of the meadow or of the swamp." Rashi explains that we're talking about over here. Chazeres shel agam, Rashi translates it as lettuce, as swamp lettuce. Tosfos objects that the word merarisa doesn't actually mean chazeres, which is in the Mishnah in Pesachim, it mentions five species that you're allowed to use for morer. Chazeres is first on the list. The last one is called morer. In other words, you have a generic term morer, and then you have a specific type of vegetable or herb or something called morer, and the Gemara there translates it as merarisa. And here it's the same word merarisa. So Tosfos says then that apparently it can't be a subspecies of Chazeres. It has to be a subspecies of Morer, the fifth one. The kind that's called the Merarisa of the meadow, Odom Yotze Behen Yudei Chavosa Pesach, of course it can be Yotze, the mitzvah of eating Morer on Pesach with that. It is bitter, and as the Gemara is going to say, there's no problem the fact that it has the additional name. So the Gemara says, Mesi, I have a contradiction. When it comes in another area of halacha, we find that if something has a secondary name, it's pasul. Namely, ezov. The pasuk tells us in various places that you need ezov for certain mitzvahs. They needed it in Mitzrayim for daubing the blood of the korban pesach on the doors. In later times, they need that. It's part of the process of the tahara of a mitzvah. You need ezov for preparing the parah adumah. They need to throw some ezov into the fire, and then also they need a piece of ezov to sprinkle the parah adumah water. Anyway, all those cases where it says ezov means it has to be the kind that's called ezov exclusively, v'loy ezov yavon, not the kind of ezov that not Greek ezov, v'loy ezov kuchli, not kuchli ezov, which means either kuchli can either mean that it's bluish, blackish, or it can mean it comes from a place called kochal, whatever, not that kind. The loy ez of midbori, not the kind that grows in a desert. The loy ez of roimi, not Roman ezov. The loy ez of shiyesh l'shem levai, and not any other kind of ezov that has a secondary name. It has to be the kind that's called exclusively ezov. So by the same logic, why shouldn't we say over here that it has to be the kind that's called exclusively that's called exclusively merarisa? Now the Gemara in Pesachim actually discusses the question that when it says in the Mishnah over there that you can use five species, does it mean only those or does it mean anything else? And the Gemara actually brings a few different opinions about that. So one possibility is that our Gemara is disagreeing with various opinions over there and saying that from our Gemara it comes out that apparently you can only use davka, the five that it mentions there, which is why the Gemara seems to be asking that how can you use this if it's not on that list? And the answer is going to be it is on that list. The fact that it has a secondary name doesn't matter. But in any case, we don't just say, well, because it's bitter, you're allowed to use it. On the other hand, there are Mephoshim, for example, the Meiri, who understand the question of the Gemara over here to be not so much you shouldn't be allowed to use it, but in particular, we said Rashi defines this as chazeres of the meadow. And we said Tosfos asks on that. Now, the fact is, it does mention five vegetables over there, but the first one on the list is chazeres, and the Gemara explains over there it's most preferable to use chazeres. For a couple, because the name of it is Chasa in Aramaic, which represents that Hashem Chos, that Hashem had Rachmanos on us, Also, it starts out sweet and ends up bitter, like the experience of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. So, therefore, that's the most preferred. So, according to that way of looking at it, the Gemara is not saying over here it should be possible to use it. Fine, you can use anything that has the criteria that it mentions in the Gemara over there. But rather, the question is this one considered chazeres to the extent that it should be mitzvah and amuvcher? It should be the preferable way to use this as opposed to anything else. Anyway. So that's the question then. If by Ezev we're saying that you have to definitely use Ezev that doesn't have a secondary name, then why is it by here? By Merarisa to Agma, we don't have that issue. There is, by the way, a vote on this, from a Tzadik HaKoyen. He says the word that the Ezev in general represents humility. We say, for example, by the Mitzvah, that the reason why he's told to take both Eitz Erez and Ezev is he was proud like a cedar tree, and therefore instead he has to be humble like the Ezev grass, which is a low shrub. So he says a vort on it. The Gemara is hinting at over here the proper kind of anivus, not Ezev Yavon, not where like the Chachma of the Yavonim, he realizes logically that I got to be Anav. That's not the kind of Anivus we're looking for. Not Ezev Kuchli, where he pretends to be, like this one has a color to it. But not Midbari, where he's indeed like a Midbar. He Taka has no Milus, and therefore he's humble because he has nothing to be proud of anyway. And not Ezev Roimi, that he really is a Bal Gaiva inside, like the Romans. The Romans are a byword for Gaiva. So none of those. You want actual plain Ezev, that a person has Milus, but he realizes that he feels honor, but he realizes he doesn't even have to feel logically, that's what we said, is Ezev Yavon, but he is in fact honor in reality, like Moshe Rabbeinu was. Anyway, so Omer Abaye says the rule is like this: Kol Shenishtana Shmoi Kodem Matan Torah. When you have something that had a different name before Matan Torah, for example, these various kinds of Ezov. Now, not all of them were named that before Matan Torah. For example, Roimi didn't exist at the time of Matan Torah, but the point is, all of these various subspecies had names before Matan Torah. Or Bosa Torah, Peter Olive, and the Torah is Makbid and says you need Ezov, then it implies that time, via Durashi Yeshle Shem Levi, then you know that it has a secondary name. So in other words, when the Torah was given, there were already a number of different types of Ezov that people would distinguish with different names, and the Torah is telling you to use plain Ezov, implying don't use any of these others. Vahani v'nishtana shmayu kodem matan Torah. Now, when it comes to this Merarisa de'agma, the name of it was not changed kodem matan Torah klal. Before the Torah was given, they were just called Merarisa. Later on, people decided that's useful to distinguish between the ones that grow in the swamps and the meadows and the ones that grow elsewhere. But essentially, they were all called Merariso or Morer at the time the Torah was given. Therefore, we can continue to use them even though the name changed afterwards. Rav Amar, Rav says a different answer. You don't really need that, he says. Hani Merarisa Stamashmai. Even now, the name of them is essentially just Merarisa. Bahai the Korivu Merarisa de Agma. The reason why people call them Merarisa of the meadow is Mishum de Meshtakach Ba'agma, because you most commonly find them in the meadow. So therefore, in other words, it's not really a secondary name. One of the Meforshim explains, in other words, the distinction that Rava is making as compared to Abaya is sometimes you have, for example, nowadays you have, let's say, different varieties of a certain vegetable, which are so different, they're different enough that they have different names because they grow in different places or whatever, and we distinguish them. Like, for example, let's say different kinds of squashes. You have, you know, butternut squash and acorn squash and this, because they're different enough that people have to give them different names. So even in a place, let's say, for example, you have regular cucumbers and English cucumbers, let's say. So even in England, they may not call them English cucumbers, but they have to call them something to distinguish them from the regular ones. Versus you have two things that are fairly similar, and they may not bother in some places to distinguish them by different names. So that's what Rava is saying with this Merarisa de Agma. Essentially, it's like that. It's not really that different than plain Merarisa, that it should require a different name, practically speaking, because it's more commonly found in the meadow. Some people call it that, but it's not that's its intrinsic, that it has to have a different name. Okay. Getting back now to dinner. So that's the maskana, therefore, you are allowed to use it on Pesach. Because even though it has a secondary name, it's not really an intrinsic secondary name. Okay. Getting back to Schach now, Omer of Chista, Iger b'chad lo shmei eged. Now, we said before, we talked about yesterday, for example, you have these kinds of the root or the top of a palm tree or certain kinds of reeds or whatever that grow as one piece on the bottom and then branch out toward the top. So we said if you bundle that together, even if you bundle the loose ends together, it's not considered an igud, and therefore you don't have a problem. You can use it for schach. Shalish shnei egin. And on the other hand, if you have three of them bound together, then it would be considered an egin. Now, we said yesterday, Tosfos had brought from the Yerushalmi that you need 25 pieces to make an egin. So what's going on over here that we're saying three? One possibility is, in fact, all Gemara is arguing with that Yerushalmi. Another possibility is that maybe all Gemara is talking about, and this is brought by Halacha. Let's say, for example, you have one of these reeds that we described yesterday. It starts by growing as one trunk, and then it branches out into a bunch of reeds that stick up. So we said you're allowed to cut the whole thing off and use it for schach. You have more than 25 reeds sticking out. Doesn't matter because they all grow from one end naturally. But what if you took now a couple of those and bundled them together? And now altogether between the three pieces that you bundled together, you have more than 25 reeds sticking out. That's what the Gemara is saying over here would be a problem. Even though you only have three trunks, but you have also, you do have three is enough to consider it to be considered a bundle, and you have at the other end, they branch off into more and more branches, and you have altogether in the aggregate more than 25, that would be a problem, which is what the Gemara is implying over here. Okay. Shnayim, now what happens if you have two things bundled together, machloikas rabiyasi virabonon, then it would be a machloikas of rabiyasi and rabonon, which we're going to go back to Ezev now in connection with Ezev for the Parah Adruma and relate it to that. The Tanan, we learn in Masech the Parah, mitzvahs Ezev shloisha klochim, the ideal way to do the mitzvah of Ezev is to use three klochim, Rashi defines klochim as roots. So you take three roots of Ezov with the plants growing out of them, over hand shloisha divolin, and you have in them are three branches. So each root has a branch growing out of it, and then what you do is Rashi defines to be exact divol is the branch where you have the seeds at the top of it. So it may not be a branch, as more like a pod or something. Whatever it is, the point is that you have the ideal way is you take three of those and then you bind them together and you use that to sprinkle Parah Adruma water. Rav Yosi and the mitzvah Ezev shloisha divolim. Rav Yosi says the mitzvah of Ezev is again to have three branches, ushyor of shnayim, and then if you have leftover, let's say you started sprinkling with three of them and later on as you're going around, you have a lot of different people and kalim and whatever to sprinkle on, one of them fell out. That's okay. You can still use two of them. You can still continue to use two. The gardum of kol shehu. And the broken off pieces is fine as long as you have kol shehu. Rashi describes, you use it, you have ezev, after all, it's a very soft plant. So you use it over and over for hazar. Eventually pieces break off. As long as you have at the end, so you have a little bit of it left, then it's still kosher as long as you have a little bit left of each one, so you can still call it an aguda. Tosfos explains, in other words, that by Mitzrayim, by Pesach Mitzrayim, the expression is olakachtem agudas ezev. You should take a bundle of ezev, and a bundle is defined as a bundle. So we're saying, according to the Tanakhama, is described as three, and according to the Yosi, and according to the Yosi also, it's described as three. But then you can start out with three, but then you have two only later on. So that's what we're going to discuss. What about having two? So kasalka daitin now. We assume, for purposes of the discussion, midishyot of shnayim tchilosi namishnayim, since Rav Yosi is saying it's good enough if you have two left over afterwards, apparently Rav Chista understands the machlokas, that since Rav Yosi is saying that two is enough afterwards, tchilosi namishnayim, that it's good enough to start out with two also. In other words, that Rav Yosi would say that it's only the ideal way to do the mitzvah would be to have three, but you're allowed to start out with two, and that would be considered an aguda, according to him. So when he says three, it means only for the mitzvah. Therefore, umid Rav Yosi shloisha l'mitzvah. So apparently then, the idea would be that if according to Rav Yosi, you only need three to begin with for the mitzvah, that means l'rabbanon, and if you have two afterwards, it's fine, l'rabbanon shloisha l'akiv. Then the Chachamim, on the other hand, would be disagreeing and saying that, no, you must have three. So therefore, so that would be, so Rav Chista is saying that if there's two things bundled together, it's machlokas, whether it's considered a bundle. Apparently, that's how he learns this machlokas of Rav Yossi and the Chachamim. Rav Yossi would say that two already is considered a bundle, and therefore, as far as schach, two of those reeds, for example, bundled together, would already be considered a bundle and would be subject to the Gzeira of, and would be subject to the Gzeira over here. And according to the Chachamim, you would need three. So the problem is, why do we have to understand it that way? Bar Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Bar Tanya, Rav Yossi, Ezev Tchilose Shnaim, Rav Yossi says that the Ezev to begin with, you can have two, Ushyarav Echad, no, Rav Yossi is saying, if you have two to begin with, then it's possible. Ushyarav Echad, and if at the end, after some of it falls away, you have only one, possible. The Ene Kosher, and he says it's not Kosher, Adshi Heitz Chilose Shlosha, Ushyarav Shnayim. It's only Kosher if you started out with three, and then later on, one of them fell out and you're left with two. So how can you tell me Rav Yossi says that you need three only the mitzvah, when we see this other Braisa says that he's saying that you must have three to begin with? So the answer is April. So therefore, we can say the other way around. We can still accept what Rav Chista is saying, that there's a difference that two is going to be subject to a machlokas of Rav Yossi and the Chachamim, but the distinction is actually going to be the other way around. Not that the Chachamim are going to say you must have three, and Rav Yossi is saying it's fine too, but the other way around. Rav Yossi shloshal achiv, l'rabbanon shloshal mitzvah. According to Rav Yossi, you must have three to begin with. And according to the Chachamim, we're going to say it's a mitzvah, ideally, to have three, because that's an aguda, but it's kosher b'di'evid with only two. V'ha, Tanya, and indeed, we learn like that in another b'raisa, ezet chilos eshnayim eshyarev echon kosher, that if you start out with two branches of ezet, and eventually you only have one, then it's still kosher, v'ene posel, abshihet chilos eshyarev echon. And it's only possible if you started out with, and then later on you have left with one. So therefore, so we see that the Chachamim are saying that you don't need three to begin with. It's fine to have two, and you are yotze that way. The hazar of the Pora Adruma water is kosher. It's only if you started out with one that it's possible. So the Gemara says, "Shiyarav echad possible." So what are you telling me that? What are you telling me if there's only one left over, it's possible? How much shiyarav echad kosher? You just said that if there's one left, according to the Chachamim, it's kosher. Ela ema ad shetech chilasei kishiyarav echad. We have to fix it up. What we mean is what the Chachamim are saying in this last price is. It's only possible if the beginning is like the end, namely that it would be only one. So in other words, if you start out with one, everybody's going to agree it's possible, because that definitely can't be called an aguda, which is what Rav Chista was saying. On the other hand, if you start out with two, then the Chachamim are going to say it's kosher, b'di'evid, and Rav Yossi is going to say not. And then according to the Chachamim, if you started out with two, and later on one of them fell out, then that's fine, you can still continue using the other one. Rav Akiva Eger asked a question over here, actually, you have in Gilyan Ashas on Omer Aleph. You have a long thing from Rabbi Akiva Eger, and actually it's not the question is not original to him. It's in the Ritva on the Gemara also that the fact is that even if you don't bundle together the pieces of Ezev at all, then it's kosher. If you start out with two according to the Chachamim or three according to the Yossi branches of Ezev, and you don't actually bundle them together, then never you don't actually tie them together, then b'di'evid. Then b'di'evid is kosher. So that being the case, how are we b'chlal learning from that to our din over here about a bundle with schach? And there's an answer that Mepharshim give that nevertheless we still see that the number of them, it's true, you don't have to bundle them, and the reason is because the Torah doesn't mention in other places, because the Torah never mentions that you have to bundle them together. It mentions that gudas ezev, but other than that, it doesn't mention anywhere that you have to bundle them, but nevertheless we can still learn from what it talks about over here, about the number, that when we're talking about the definition of an aguda, that nevertheless we can talk about whether it means two or three. Okay. More about bundles. Dorash Maremer. Maremer Darshan as follows. Now, we said you're not allowed to use bundles for schach, because again, you have a concern that when the person brings the bundle home, it may not, the chlal, he may not have in mind for schach at all. He may put it on top of a frame over there that he uses for his animals to stay in or whatever, and he's putting it up there just to dry. So the premise is, in other words, what we're going to say is that only if you have a bundle, which is meant to be kept like that in a bundle for a while, once you bring it home, then it's going to be a problem. Therefore, hani isuraisa basura, the kind of bundles that they make in sura, where they bundle a bunch of reeds or pieces of wood or whatever together, mesachin mahu, you're allowed to use them as schach, and there's no problem of zeras oitzer. Because even though they're tied together, only they're only tied together for purposes of counting them. In other words, as soon as a person buys them, even if he's going to dry them, he's going to untie them. So therefore, there's no problem that so if you want to use them for schach, still bundled, then that will be fine. There's not going to be gzeiras oitzer, because most people don't keep them bundled once they bring them home. They usually unbundle them and spread them out to dry. Therefore, in this case, if you put the bundle up there, we're not concerned that you're going to say you're going to put it up there to dry and then you're going to end up using it for schach and tassel. I mean, also because most people don't keep it bundled anyway. They unbundle it as soon as they get home. Another din about things that are bundled together. Amr of Abba, hani tzrifi d'urbanim. These are huts that are made out of arub. So Rashi describes that these are used. They use them. For example, when they're hunting birds. So they set up in English, you have something called a duck blind, where you hide inside it in order to be able to hunt ducks. So here you have something similar to be able to hunt birds. Rashi describes that it's shaped like a hat. So what it is you have a bunch of arava branches. They're all tied together at the top. Then they go down and they form a circular thing. And then the bottom of it, at the bottom, they go and weave back in and out through the aravas. They weave arava branches, or not even arava branches. They may weave through their, a string or something, and then they tie it in one place. So that holds the whole thing together. So it comes out looking sort of like a very like an oversized yarmulke, with a hem around the bottom, and then and something holding it and a knot holding it together at the top. So Rav Abba says, "Hani tzrifid urbani." Now, so the material of them is perfectly kosher for schach. They're made out of arava branches or other branches like that, so they'd be perfectly kosher for schach. The problem is they're tied together. So when you untie the top knot that holds them all together, then they're kosher for schach. Ma'adanim actually brings from a pasuk in Iyov. The word ma'adanos over there means bonds. So therefore, over here also, you untie the top knot. So the question is, aren't they also woven together on the bottom, like we said? So I'm going to pop it to Shari. Okay, so the papa says, fine. What you do is you untie that knot as well. You don't have to take out the whole string that you use to weave around the bottom. But once you untie the knot that holds the two ends of the string together, and you have the knot on top undone, then you have yourself a kosher sukkah. The Amr of Huna Bered of Yeshua, but Rav Huna Bered of Yeshua says, no, you don't need even that. After the tamer delay Shari Lahu, you could even say that he doesn't have to untie the bottom, because kol egid in it also the talfloy, because any kind of knot that's not meant to carry it by, loishme egid is not considered a knot. Over here, I guess you don't really carry the tzrifa de urbani from one place to another, but even if you do, once the top knot is undone, even if the bottom knot is still intact, you're still not going to be able to carry it from one place to another without it falling apart. Therefore, the point of Rav Yeshua says that is no problem, and you can keep the bottom knot in place. You just have to remove the top knot. The Ritva discusses actually that it doesn't necessarily mean that you physically can't carry it. It may mean that it's not meant to carry. So you have, in other words, this knot at the bottom is not meant. Again, the purpose of you don't usually carry your tzrifi d'urbani from one place to another. You build it where you're going to be hunting, where you're going to be trapping birds, and then when you need a new one someplace else, then you build a new one someplace else. So the knot is not made. So even though physically maybe you could carry it with the knot, but the fact is that you don't. The fact is not designed for that, and therefore it's not a problem. Going back now, it's kind of funny. On Amud Aleph, we had something about Morer as a side thing. Then we're really in the middle of talking about Schach. Now we're Morer and Schach combined together, and we're going to talk about both of them together. So Amr of Abba, Amr of Abba, Amr Shmuel, Yerokas to Amr Chachamim, Adam Yotz Behen Yedei Chayvasi Pesach. The various vegetables that the Chachamim said a person can be Yotze with on Pesach. Now all of them have very thin leaves. The pashtus, you know, like this, we use romaine lettuce and horseradish nowadays. So romaine lettuce, of course, the leaves are very thin. Horseradish, we don't use the actual leaves of it; we use the roots of it. And obviously, the roots are not thin at all. They're not going to be like what the Gemara is going to say over here. They dry up and are insubstantial. But so the pashtus, the Gemara is talking about the leaves of all of them. Anyway, so all of those vegetables that can be used for Maror, they have the following dinim. Mivien es haTruma. Number one, they're able to bring Truma from one place to another. Now, what we mean is, in other words, like this. When you have Truma under an overshadowing roof, if you have, we talked about this last week on Daf Dalet, that if you have an Oihel Tefach, a space of a Tefach long, a Tefach wide, and a Tefach high, above a kazayis of a mess or a whole mess or whatever, then the tumah is confined within the oil. So what happens is anything else that's in that same oil, any other person or any keli that's in that oil becomes tumah. On the other hand, the oil blocks the tumah from going above or below. So for example, if there was tumah, let's say in this room over here, there you have an oil tefach. So the tumor would spread throughout the entire room. Anybody who's under the same roof as it is going to become tame. On the other hand, if a person is upstairs, they won't. So those two things are called mevien and choitzin. That spreads the tumor throughout the room under the thing that's overhanging or whatever is called mevien, and that it blocks the tumor from going to a different floor is called choitzin. So now, Rav Abba wants us to know as follows. On a deraisa level, now you have to consider, these vegetables dry up very fast. So you have, let's say, for example, a lettuce leaf. Right now it's fresh, but very soon, if you don't refrigerate it, it's going to be dry, and it's going to be very insubstantial, and it's going to blow away. Therefore, it is maybe a tumah. It does bring tumah from one place to another. So if you have a lettuce leaf hanging in the air over there, and you have, or suspended from a wire or whatever, and you have under one end of it is a piece of tumah, and under the other end of it is a keli, and it's at least a tefach by a tefach, then it will, the keli will become tumah. On the other hand, the ein choitzin b'fnei tumah, but they don't block the tumah. Let's say you had above the lettuce leaf, directly above the kazayis min ames, you had a keli, the lettuce leaf is not going to block the tumah from going through. The reason being, this is midrabbanan, Rashi explains, because a person is going to think to himself, wait, there's a leaf in between, therefore I don't have to worry, the thing is tahor, and he's not going to realize that the leaf is soon enough going to dry up, and then it's very insubstantial, it's just going to crumble and blow away, and then there's not going to be an oihol there at all. So midrabbanan, even while the leaf is fresh, the Chachamim said that it doesn't block the tumah from going upward or downward. There are rishonim who have a girsa in the first one that say ein mivienes haTruma, and they say on a daraisa level, in fact, it wouldn't bring Truma from one place to another, because even on a daraisa level, we take the view that it's going to dry up so fast that therefore it can't be considered an oihel haTruma. And therefore they have the girsa ein mivien ve'ein choitzin, which would mean that midaraisa, it doesn't bring Truma from one place to another, but midrabanan, it does, and it's not choitzit, and it doesn't block the Truma. And the third din, Rashi also says a line over here, Delav Michael Adam Ninhu, these are not human food. But actually Tosfos says that doesn't really belong in Rashi, and it doesn't make sense anyway, because murder by definition has to be something that's edible by people. In fact, the Gemara discusses in Pesachim, when we're trying to figure out what exactly is murder, the Gemara mentions a certain kind of plant over there which is not normally eaten by people, and it says it can't be murder because the murder has to be something that's normally eaten. So how can you say over here it's not normally human food? Tosfos says that this is actually a note that somebody named Rabbi Yehuda added into Rashi. The real Rashi himself never said such a thing, that it's not edible. And in fact, a few Rashis later, he actually mentions that they are oichle yod. So far then we have two dinim. So number one, they're considered an oichel, midaraisa, and therefore they bring the truma from one place to another horizontally. But midrabanan, even while they're fresh, we don't consider them an oil to block the truma vertically. And number three, you post them basukah mishum aver. Number three, if you use them as schach, then they would make the sukkah puzzle if there's the amount of them that airspace passes the schach. Now, we haven't really gotten into this. We've talked about a little bit. We're going to talk about more extensively later in the perek about schach posel, how much of it you need to passel the sukkah. The rule is if it's in the middle of the sukkah, the amount is 4 tefachim. And if it's on the edge, then it's 4 amos. But on the other hand, then you have a case where there's empty space. And there the halacha is, if you have 3 tefachim of empty space, then the sukkah is going to be posel. To be exact, actually, when we say 3 tefachim of empty space, what we mean is, in other words, if it's a small sukkah and you don't have 7x7 without it. If you have 3 walls and schach near those 3 walls, and then you have 3 tefachim empty someplace else, then that's not going to be a problem. But if you have 3 tefachim empty where you need the walls and the schach, then you're going to have a problem. The point is, these vegetables, because they dry up so fast, they dry up within the week of sukkahs, therefore, already now we consider as though they were dried up and gone, and therefore as though the space where they are is empty space. If they're mukshar l'kabel tumah, they're anyway going to be possible for schach, because they're able to be m'kabel tumah. So we're talking about even if they're not mukshar l'kabel tumah. Now the rule is, by the way, when we said that you can't use something that's m'kabel tumah, we mean even if it's not actually ready to become tumah yet, but just it's something that once it has the necessary things done to it, then it could become tummy. Regular foods, for example, forget about these vegetables. You can't, let's say, use cucumbers or tomatoes for your schach, even though, let's say you just pick them and they're not yet makabel tumah, because all they need is hech or the kabel tumah. All they need is to become wet with one of the shiva mashkin, and then they're able to become tummy. So, but here we're talking about that if you use lettuce, for example, for schach, then you have a different problem. It's not so much that they're makabel tumah. It's the problem they dry up so fast. Therefore, we consider as though they weren't there, and therefore as though the space where they were is considered just like empty space and passels the sukkah on those grounds rather than on the grounds of schach posel. So my time
in the case of food, he still has to have the kavana that they become tummy, and if he doesn't have that kavana, they don't become tummy.
This is true. Nonetheless, though, this is true. But that's neither here nor there. The point is that they have the capability of becoming tummy. So they have the capability of
not if he doesn't have the kavana.
Doesn't matter. The fact that there's something which is able to become tummy without actually changing their form, all you need in order for them to become tummy is for them to become wet. Unlike, for example, let's say, so if you use, let's say, wood for schach, obviously if you transform the wood, if you plane it down and make kalim out of it and whatever, then they're going to be makabel tumah. But as it is, as a board of wood, it's not makabel tumah. On the other hand, with fruits and vegetables and things, you don't need to do anything to them other than them becoming wet. Yeah, of course, you have to have the kavana that you wanted them to become wet, but that's not a change in the actual thing. Therefore, you're not allowed to use them for schach. And therefore, now we're saying, anyway, the vegetables that you can use for murder have a further problem because they have such thin, insubstantial leaves that dry up very fast. Then therefore you can't use them for schach, but if you do, they're considered like empty space rather than like posel schach, and they're going to posel the sukkah with a smaller amount. So the Gemara continues, my timer. So why is that? Because when they dry up, they crumble and they fall away. Come on, the last new dummy. So even now we consider them as though they weren't there. Now, speaking of Tumah V'Tahara, let's get into a discussion about Inyonim of Tumah V'Tahara as they relate to stems and to stems and stalks and others of food. Now, you have like this. We know that food, fruits, vegetables, etc. are able to become Tumah, as we just said. There is also a halacha called Yodos. We say, for example, let's say an apple is able to become Tumah once it becomes wet. Not only the apple, but also the stem attached to it.
It's machlokas rishonim, or it seems it's a machlokas rishonim, whether it's that the stem itself actually becomes tamei, or whether it's just that it's a handle to transmit tumah to the apple. But in other words, the point is, if let's say tumah, let's say something tamei touches the stem of the apple, it never touched the apple at all, nevertheless the apple is going to become tamei. That concept is called yodos. The Gemara in Chulin learns it from Sukkim. So now, let's talk about yodos as they relate to schach. So for Amar of Abba, Amar of Huna, habotzo lagas ein lo yodos. First of all, if a person is harvesting grapes, having in mind that he's going to press them in the wine press, then the concept of yodos does not apply. So if you have you harvested the grapes and you still have stems or branches or whatever attached to them, those stems are not able to transmit the tumah to the grapes. So if something tamei touches the stem or the branch which is attached to the grapes are not going to become tamei. And the reason is, as the Gemara is going to say soon, because when you're pressing grapes for wine, you don't want stems over there. Normally, like this, you want a stem attached to a fruit so you can eat it. You want, let's say, a stem attached to an apple. It's a handy way to hold the apple. But over here, you don't want the stem attached to the grapes that you're going to press, because every stem that's there is going to absorb a little bit of the wine. So therefore, you don't want them. Therefore, the concept of yodos doesn't apply. But Rav Menashe Bagada Omer Rav Huna. Now, on the other hand, Rav Menashe Bagada said also in the name of Rav Huna, Hakotzo l'schach ein l'yodos. If a person is harvesting grain and having in mind to use it for schach, then there's no yodos. And again, the idea is he doesn't want food in his schach. After all, if you have you have a little bit of grain attached to the straw, it's not going to passel the sukkah. But if you have too much grain in there, it's going to passel it. So therefore, he doesn't want any. He wants as little as possible grain attached to his schach, and therefore, again, you can't consider the straw that's attached to the grain to be yodos. So the Gemara is saying, the Gemara is going to say that Rab Abba and Rab Menashe are actually arguing. It's not just we're going to say that Rab Abba is saying one statement that Rab Huna made and Rab Menashe is bringing a different statement, not a contradictory one. No, they're actually contradicting each other. Because Manda Amakotzer, Rab Menashe, who said that Rab Huna had talked about the case where a person harvests for schach, he would say Kol Shekein Boitzer. He would say, fine, I agree with Rab Huna's din, I agree with Rab Abba's din, that the same thing would apply to harvesting grapes. He doesn't want the stems attached. He doesn't want them to absorb the wine, the grape juice. Therefore, we can make a kavachomer. If even by schach, where the person maybe doesn't mind having a little bit of grain attached, he just doesn't want very much of it attached, and we're already saying that's not considered yodos, how much more so with grapes for pressing, where he doesn't want any stems attached. On the other hand, on the other hand, Rav Abba, who mentioned the statement of Rav Huna only about harvesting grapes, and then there's no yodos, he would say, no, avakotzer yesh lo yodos. On the other hand, when it comes to harvesting, then there would be yodos. Then the concept of yodos would apply, and we have to talk about whether they are mekabel tumah, and therefore whether you can use them for schach. After all, you could argue he does want to use them for schach, in order that they don't scatter. So what does that mean? There's two ways of explaining. Does it mean he doesn't mind having some grain attached to it? True, if there's a lot of grain he doesn't want, because then it's going to be possible schach. On the other hand, you could argue, maybe if there's only a little bit of grain attached to the stalks, he does actually want that grain in order that afterwards, later on, after sukkah, maybe he can collect that grain and be able to eat it. So therefore, he'd rather have them attached to the straw and will stay on a sukkah throughout sukkah, and after sukkah, he'll be able to get it. Or the other way of understanding it is the other way around. Having the grain attached to the straw weights down the straw a little bit, and it keeps the straw from blowing away, it keeps the straw that he's using for schach from blowing away, and in that sense, there is a certain reason why he would want the stalks attached to the food. So therefore, you could argue that in that case, in fact, the concept of yodos would apply, and therefore that you couldn't use such straw with grain attached for schach. So the Gemara says, "Name it the Rav Menashe Bagada Tanoi." Well, can we say that what the Menashe of Agada is saying is actually a Machlokas Tanoim? Now, the Gemara is going to explain soon that according to Rav Abba, necessarily the Machlokas Tanoim that we're going to quote now necessarily has to exist according to Rav Abba. But according to Rav Menashe, who's saying that neither of these cases is the Yodis, not when you're harvesting Pesach and not when you're harvesting to press grapes, should we say that there's actually a Machlokas Tanoim on that subject? D'tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Suppose you have branches of a fig tree over hen to enim, and you have some figs still attached to the branches, parchilin, or you have grapevines, you have grape branches over hen anovim, and you have some grapes attached to them, kashin, and you have straw over hen shibolim, and attached to them are some sheaves of grain, machbedes over hen tmarim, or you have palm tree branches, and you have some dates attached to them. Kulon, with all of them, the rule is, as far as tzach, im psoilus meruba ala oichlim kshera, if you have more waste than food, so for example, with the fig tree, you have only one or two figs on it, and the volume of the fig branch is more than the figs themselves, then kshera, then it's kosher for tzach, the imlav psula, and if not, then if you have more food than branch, then it's possible, acherim oimim ad shiu kashim meruba ala yodis ala oichlim, and acherim, which usually means your mayor, says that no, you have to have that the straw, for example, is more not only than the food, but also than the yodos. So in other words, let's say with straw and what you have is like this. Let's say, for example, when it comes to this concept of yodos, you have, there's only a certain distance from the food that is considered a yad, only what's convenient to handle it by. So let's say, for example, with a stalk of grain, the entire stalk is not considered yodos. Because you don't need the entire stalk when you're using the grain for whatever purpose you're going to use it for. You have a small amount close to it, as the Gemara is going to talk about later, is useful. The rest of it is not. So now what Acherim is saying is that you have to have, and you have to consider the part which is the food, the part which has the grains on it, and that part, of course, is possible for sach. In addition, you have to consider the yodos, the part of the stalk that's close to it, the part of the straw of the stalk that's close to it, which is considered a yad. All of that we consider as one category. Then you look at the rest of the straw, and if you have more straw, then all of that combined, then it'll be kosher for sach, and if not, then not. So, my lab bahokamifli, the marsava yeshlahan yodis, or marsava inlahan yodis. So on the face of it, that's a machlokas. Reb Meir holds that when you're harvesting for schach, there are yodis. So even though you don't really want the grain to be there so much, but you want a little bit of it to be there at least, if you have less grain than straw, then you don't mind it being there. Again, because it'll help preserve the grain until after sukkahs, or the other way around, it'll help preserve the straw from blowing away. So, and therefore the mayor says that yodos apply, which would be like Rav Abba, and not like Rav Menashe, Umar Sova Inland Yodos, whereas the Tanakama holds that there's no yodos, which would be like what Rav Menashe said. So the Gemara says, Rav Abba Vadi Tanoi. There's no question, according to Rav Abba, necessarily you have to say it's a Machlokas Tanoim. Given that Rav Abba only mentioned the case where you don't want the stems there because of practical reasons, not just because of halacha reasons, but because of practical reasons, because it absorbs the wine, and he holds, as we said, that harvesting Pesach, not necessarily do we say, we still have to say that there are yodos, because the fact that you, Pesach, maybe you don't want grain, but you do want a little bit of it, so the grain doesn't scatter, or so the straw doesn't scatter. So according to Rav Abba, definitely, there's no question, you have to say there's a machlokas tanoim over here. Necessarily, he would have to say, I hold like a chayim. There's no way to make Rav Abba's opinion work according to the Tanakhama. Because what the Tanakhama is saying there's no yodos, and according to Rav Abba was saying when you harvest Pesach, then there are. Little Menashe Bagada Milema Tanoi. Do we necessarily have to say that according to the Menashe Abba, it's also a Machlokas, and his opinion would be only according to the Chachamim and not according to Achayim? The answer is Amalach HaMenashe, no, the Menashe can answer you. The Kulei Alma Savri HaKotzel V'Schach Ein Lo Yodos. No, they both might agree that there's no Yodos because you're harvesting for Schach purposes rather than for food. V'Hoch Maya Skinen, but the case we're talking about over here, where Acherim are talking about Yodos, is you're going to Kotzitzan La'Achila, suppose that to begin with, he harvested this grain, having in mind to eat the grain, V'Nimlach Aleim L'Sikuch. And then he changed his mind after he harvested it and decided that he's going to use it for Schach. So therefore, so to begin with, he had a machshava that these things, that the part of the stalk close to the food is going to be a yad, and therefore, now in order to make it not a yad, he would have to do a maisa to it. So the question is, nu, in that case, why would the Chachamim say there are no yadis? The Chitemas, you're going to answer Kasavi Rabbanon, maybe the Chachamim hold, given the Nimlach Aleim Lassikuch, Botlelem Achshavdoi, you're going to argue that maybe once he changed his mind and decided to use him for staff, the machshava goes away, and therefore what would normally have been considered a yad is not considered a yad anymore. It's not makabel tumah. How could that be? Umid botlele machshava b'hachi. How can he be mevatel it with only a machshava? V'hatzinan. We learn in a Mishnah, kol akelim yodim l'day tumah machshava. Any keli can become is makabel tumah only by thought. So Rashi gives an example over here. Let's say a person has a piece of leather. Now, you have, if a person is planning to use this leather, for example, for a tablecloth, then you don't need anything else. Once it's tanned to make leather, then already it's usable as is as a tablecloth. Now, if later on he decides that he wants instead to use it to make shoelaces, and to, for that purpose, you need to cut it into strips. So it doesn't matter. It's already makabel tumah based on his original machshava that he's going to use it for a tablecloth or whatever. So machshava is enough to make it makabel tumah. The ein oilin mitumasin ela b'shinei maisa. But to be no longer makabel tumah, it's not enough to think differently. You have to do a maisa. So in our case over here, let's say if he wanted to make it, this leather is not going to be a makabel tumah anymore, he would actually have to start cutting it. Once he starts cutting it, showing that he doesn't want to use it as a tablecloth anymore, he wants to use it as shoe straps, then it's not makabel tumah anymore until he cuts it apart into shoe straps and then those are makabel tumah again. And continues the Mishnah. The rule is ma'isa motzi miyan ma'isa miyan machshava. When you do a second ma'isa, that undoes the effect of the first ma'isa or the machshava. So in other words, like we said, so if he had thought that this is going to be used as a tablecloth, or if he did a ma'isa to make it into a tablecloth, let's say for example he hemmed the edges, and now he does another ma'isa, starting to cut it apart. So that undoes the previous ma'isa and makes it not makabel tumah anymore. On the other hand, machshava any mitzia loy miyad ma'isa v'loy miyad machshava. But a machshava doesn't undo the effect of a ma'isa or of a machshava. So over here, if he originally harvested this grain, having in mind to eat the grain, when then we say that yodos is in effect, because now you have the part of the straw that's close to it is useful when you're holding the grain, then having a machshava afterwards, he's going to be using it for schach, won't take away the status of yadis on that part. So how can the chachamim say, if you're going to say we're talking about that originally he harvested for food and then changed his mind and decided to use it for schach, achirim we understand why they say there's yadis. Why would the chachamim say there's yadis? Why would the chachamim say there's no yadis? The chitema hani mili kelim dechashivi. So you're going to answer, okay, maybe that concept about ma'isa and machshava only applies to kelim, which after all are important. Aber yodos de letzarech achila ninu. But yodos are there really only in order to be able to hold on to them and eat the food. Therefore, machshava naisa or machshava nasa or machshava salka. Maybe you could argue that yodos are not important enough for there to be a problem. Maybe machshava can make them yodis and machshava can take them away from being yodis, because in and of themselves they're not actually keli and they're not actually kalim and they're not actually food. They're only a handle to hold the food by. No, can't be. V'hatznan, we learn in a Mishnah, kol yodis ha'uchlin, all of these yodis of food, shebesosan bagoren, if besosan in the threshing floor, and we're going to explain in a minute what besosan means, tohoris, then those yodis are tohor, and they don't transmit tumah to the food anymore. Rabbi Yossi still says it's tomei, which we're going to take up soon. So we see, in other words, that there's a case where the yodis are not considered yodis anymore. Now, Bishleim alamanda, now there's two definitions of what besosan means. Bishleim alamanda omer besosan hitir agudon. According to the first opinion that we're going to mention soon in the Gemara, that the word besosan means that he untied them. Shapir, then fine, we understand. In other words, because then he didn't actually remove the yod, he didn't actually do anything to the yodis themselves. All he did is there was a bundle of straw over there with grain attached to the straw. He undid the bundle, and already then we're considering by unbundling it, it shows that he doesn't care for the straw anymore. He's getting ready to thresh it. and therefore that's a machshava, and we're saying that machshava takes away the status of yadayis. So then, according to that, then we understand the same thing. If he harvested them for schach, changed his mind, he harvested them for food, changed his mind, decided he wants them for schach. So then, good. What it means is his machshava is going to undo his previous machshava, and therefore the yadayis are not yadayis, and therefore that'll explain the opinion of the chachamim. But you have a second opinion further down that the sasan means that he actually threshed them, that he actually softened them and broke them up in the threshing. That's a maisa, my ikalamemar. So then what are you going to say? So then, in other words, machshava is not enough. So how are you saying that over here he harvested them for food, changed his mind, decided to use them for schach? Now we're going to say that now the yodos are not considered yodos anymore, according to the Chachamim. According to that second explanation of the Sasan, it should be considered yodos until he actually does something to them. So the answer is, okay, Hochanamish of a Sasan Mamish, fine. You can say in the Machlokas of Achirim and the Chachamim, it means that the Sasan, it means that he actually started threshing them and softening them up. In other words, the first opinion that says that he untied them, the word besosan is related to the word misbesesis b'damai, like wallowing in your blood, like you have by as soon as you untie the bundle, then right away the sheaves scatter all over the place, like they're wallowing around and on the floor. Therefore, that would be one version of besosan. The other opinion is that you actually go and start threshing them under the hooves of animals, or you're pounding them or whatever. And then the word besasan, according to that, is related to the word b'shimcha novus kamenu, which means that we will trample our enemies. So according to that, it means they're actually trampled. So the answer is, yeah, that's what we're saying. We're talking about over here, let's say he did. So let's say he harvested them for food, and therefore they have yadayis. Now he decided not only to untie them, but also to start trampling them. So now they're not considered yadayis anymore. So the question is, so why do the Acherim still hold that the Yodos are a problem? And the answer is, the reason is because they hold like Rav Yossi. It's not in Rav Yossi Matame. That same Mishnah in Uktzin continues that Rav Yossi says it's Tame. So therefore, so Rav Yossi is going to say that even after the Sasan, then the Yodos are still able to transmit Tuma to the food. And therefore, so Acherim hold like that. So the Gemara says, "Hi, Mai. What kind of an answer is that?" Bishlema Hossam. I can understand over there where we're not dealing with schach at all. We're dealing with the whole time he intends to eat the grain, and the straw is only in his way, and he wants to get rid of it during the threshing. And the reason is time of Rav Yossi. The reason why Rav Yossi says over there that the straw is still considered yodos, even after he trampled them, is chazir l'chidur of Shimon ben Lakish, is because the yodos are still useful for the reason that Rav Shimon ben Lakish mentioned, the Amr of Shimon ben Lakish, hoyel ru'uyas l'hoifchan be'esir. Because even you have these yodos are softened, they're broken up a little bit by the threshing, but they're not completely broken off. They're still partially attached to the grain, and that's useful because now it makes it easier to pick up the grain using a pitchfork. An esser is a pitchfork. So therefore, so there, Rabbi Yossi has reason to say that the yodos are still considered yodos. But over here, when you changed your mind and decided you want to use them for schach, you don't really want food attached to the schach at all. And the yodos are not tied together with the food anymore. Of necessity, you had to untie it, as we said, in order to make it for schach. So what good are the yodos doing you? Why even according to the Acherim should they still be makabel tumah? Such that the Acherim are saying that you need more straw, which is further away and still considered yodos. The answer is, it's useful because once he takes down his sukkah, he's going to still be able to hold the grain by those remaining yodos, even though they've been threshed and they've been broken up. They're not completely broken off, and therefore he's still able to use them as handles to be able to pick up the grain from after he took down his sukkah, after sukkahs, and be able to use the grain. Therefore, Acherim are going to say that the yodos still have the status of that the part of the stalk that's close to the grain is still considered yodos of the food. So in other words, what we have is like this. when it comes to regular forget, when it comes to when there's no schach involved, then we're saying that if you originally harvested them for food, then they have yodis. Everybody agrees to that. Then if you went in besosan, according to either of the definitions, then according to the chachamim, the stalks lose their status of yodis. According to the Yossi, they still retain their status of yodis because you can still, they're still useful right there in the threshing floor. You can still turn them over, when you can still use them to be able, when the straw is still attached to the grain, you're still able to use a pitchfork to turn it over, because since the straw is sticking out a little bit, then it helps the pitchfork's able to grab a hold of it. When it comes to schach, what we're saying is, according to the Chachamim, by the same token, if the sasan, then the yodis are not yodis anymore. Therefore, all the straw is usable as schach, and it's only when we consider how much schach you have versus how much food, you only need to consider all the straw versus all the grain. And if you have more straw than grain, then you're good. According to Acherim, we would say, given that, still, when you have straw attached to the grain, you can still use that straw after sukkahs to pick the pieces of grain up from among your schach, then therefore they still have the status of yodos, and therefore we have to consider those together with the grain when we're calculating how much food, how much things that are makabel tumah versus how much things that are not makabel tumah you have for your schach. Okay. Gufa. The Gemara says, getting back to what we said before, Rashi points out an interesting thing. Usually gufa, the Gemara does, when you have a statement of an amora, which we mentioned incidentally in a previous discussion, and now we want to analyze it more in detail. Here we're talking about a Mishnah. Since when do you do gufa on that? So Rashi says he asked his Rebbeim on that, and they said, he says he asked his Rebbe, he said the reason is because here we're talking about a Mishnah from Uktin. Uktin is from Seder Taharis. Taharis has no Gemara, Bavli or Yerushalmi, except from a Masechta Nidah. So therefore, when the Gemara has occasion to bring a Mishnah from those places, it may well say gufa on it. We want to explain it in more detail, because otherwise we're not going to have another Gemara to explain it in. Okay, so gufa. Kol yodosa ochon shebesosan magodin. All of these yodosic food that besosan in the threshing floor, tahoris, they're still tahor. But then they become tahor. But Rabbi Yossi, matami, we said Rabbi Yossi says they're tahor. So again, over the other way around, Rabbi Yossi says they're tahor. Rabbi Yossi says, they're tame again, because we said, because you can still pick them up with a pitchfork. So my besosan, what does the word besosan mean? So we said before, Rabbi Yochanan omer besosan mamash. Rabbi Yochanan says it means he just untied them. Rabbi Yochanan says it means he actually threshed them. Besosan miloshin novos tzareinu, that we will trample our enemies. So therefore it means he actually trampled them, started the threshing process on them. Rabbi Lazar omer hitu agdan. Rabbi Yezer, it says that he was really specific. Rabbi Lazar says it just means he untied them, and according to that, it's related to the word misbeseses, that they're scattered and flying all over the place. So, b'shleimel Rabbi Lazar d'amar b'sosin hitu agdan hainin and tamen Rabbi Yezer. That explains why Rabbi Yezer says it's still tamen. The straw is still completely attached. It's still very hard. It hasn't been weakened by the threshing at all. Therefore, Rabbi Yezer is still going to consider it a yad. Ela. Ella Rabbi Yochanan d'amar b'sosan mamish, but according to Rabbi Yochanan, that says that means that he literally trampled them. Amai matami Rabbi Yossi. Then why is Rabbi Yossi saying that it's still makabel tuma? And the answer is, like we said before, Amar Rabbi Shimon Lakish, hoyla ro'oyas lahoyfchan be'eser, because even after the straw has been threshed, it's not completely detached from the food. Therefore, you can still use it to pick it up with a pitchfork, because you still have something sticking out of the grain, which now is more useful to be able to pick it up. So, in this connection, we're mentioning an eser, which is a pitchfork, and Rashi and Tosfos actually disagree what exactly, Rashi over here translates it as a pitchfork. In Yevamos, where it also brings the Gemara, Rashi translates it rather as a different kind of farming tool, which is made more with like a netting on the end of it. I forget the word for it in English, but it's some kind of thing that doesn't have a pitchfork, has three large tines sticking out. This other one has actually a meshwork on the end of it. So Tosfos says it certainly doesn't fit with our Gemara over here, because yodis or not, that would be useful enough to pick up tavor with. So necessarily we have to say that we're talking about a pitchfork, like Rashi says over here. Anyway, So in this connection, a little thing about Gadda, Amar Rav Elazar, Lama Nimshal Tefilas and Shal Tzadikim Ke'eser. Why is the Tefillah of Tzadikim compared to an Eser we have? Vayetar Yitzchak V'Noichach Ishtei, Vayetar Loi Hashem. Literally, the word Eser in those connections means a tremendous amount. Rashi says in those places, for example, it means Hirbo V'Hifzer B'Tefillah, that he said a tremendous amount of Tefillah and Davin a lot, Yitzchak and Rivka, but it's also apparently related to the word Eser. So what's the connection between tefillah and an eser, a pitchfork? Loi malach, it tells you, ma eser zeh mahapach zafur b'gurin mimakim lamakim. Just like with a pitchfork, you use it to turn over the grain in the threshing floor from one place to another. After tefillah and shal tzedikim, ma pechas daite shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mimidas achzorius l'midas rachmanus. The same way the tefillah of Hashem transforms Hashem's midas from achzorius, from being no, cruel, you don't say that about Hashem, but whatever, on the side of it here, it brings a different gears, ragzonus, or anger, to midas rachmanus, like the pitchfork turns over the grain. Maharsha explains, in other words, not just a play on words turning over. The point is, tzaddikim are compared to grain, because they are useful for the world. Rishoyim are compared to straw. So like this, you have rishoyim in the world, and that evokes Hashem's anger. Now you have tzaddikim, on the other hand, transform the midah of the Hashem's midah of anger, Hashem's midah of din, to Rachmim for the sake of the tzaddikim. And we mention it specifically by Yitzchak, because Yitzchak's own midah was midas agvura. So we're saying Yitzchak himself was able, with his tefillahs, to transform Hashem's midas agvura, that he and Rivka couldn't have children for 20 years, into midas rachmanus, and that they should have children.